Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I'm your loving host, Todd Conklin, and I'm here to have some fun with you today. So this podcast, I think you'll find interesting. Actually, what I think you'll find this podcast is encouraging, because today's guests are pretty special people. There are a couple folks that work in an organization called ORCHSE, and if you are in the organization, you know what it is, and if you're not in the organization, I'm pretty sure that makes no sense at all. But there's good news. There's a giant web page full of information, but I'll give a brief description. Now, the folks that are going to talk today are Dee Woodall and Stephen Newell. And I got a chance to talk to both of them at a meeting in Washington, D.C., and I took it. Part of the reason I took it is because I think this ORCHSE organization is pretty cool. I really like what it stands for, and I really like what it does. But the other reason I took it is because they're actively involved in a big way, really across the world, in a special effort to better understand fatality prevention and serious incident prevention. Now, they would actually stretch it to serious incident and illness. There's a big fancy name for it. But generally, it's being sort of known as FSI, fatality and serious incidents. And they've put together several meetings, all of them really interesting and all of them pretty high-powered, where they brought people together to actually talk specifically about this problem. And so that opportunity to talk to them just seemed wasted not to share it with you. I mean, it's a really good opportunity to talk to them. Plus, they're just great people. I think you're going to like what they have to say, and you're really going to like how they talk about safety and how they talk about safety leadership and safety management systems and fatalities and serious events and snacks that they serve in the meeting. All those things are pretty important, at least to me. Enjoy this podcast. I hope that it leaves you thinking about what we can do next and encourage about the fact that a lot of people are out there really doing some heavy lifting, at least initially, and they're having lots and lots of opportunities to talk to big companies, small companies, organizations all around the world, but also government agencies and regulators. So without any further ado, this podcast features Steve Newell and Dee Woodall, and they're from ORCHSE, and I think you're going to like it. Sit back and relax. Here we go.
First time you came to ORC, do you remember that?
I kind of do, yes. It was in the Ritz-Carlton, I think.
Was it? And I remember it was in the evening session, and it was way back when we were talking, first starting to talk about processes and how human error might have an influence on safety and health, and how we should start thinking more about how human error is an issue with preventing serious injuries and fatalities.
And that was probably, I don't even, how many years ago you think that was?
Oh, I think it was probably maybe even 8 years ago now.
All I remember is you had beer and popcorn.
Yes, and since then we have added a lot more amenities to our evening sessions.
You had wine? I don't remember wine. I remember beer and popcorn, and it was a giant popcorn machine.
Oh, yes, I remember the giant popcorn machine. And you know what I remember too was that you were very serious, that you were not yourself. You were not the Todd I know today.
Really?
That is right.
Really?
That is right. You were very earnest in your belief about human error and human performance.
Oh, yeah. So in the early stages for me, I truly believed, when I started on this, I truly believed that if we could identify every single error precursor and fix it, we could remove error from the workplace. I totally believe that. I totally was convinced that that was our answer.
What?
So let me just ask a couple quick questions. Yeah. So what do you so first of all, why do you think I'd ask you to be on this podcast?
Well, we've started as a group. We're with ORCHSE Strategies, which is a safety and health environmental consulting firm. We service about 120 large global corporations in 20 different industry sectors. And as you know, we've been focused on fatality and serious injury prevention. our guys have done a really good job getting their injury and illness rates down, but they're still experiencing fatalities in serious cases. And frankly, they've been struggling with why. And so we've been focused on that for the last couple of years, and you've really helped us on that journey, Todd. We appreciate it.
So talk to me about what you think is – talk to me about sort of that why part. What do you think is going on here? What do you see as the future? Where are we going?
Yeah, I think that we're in a renaissance in health and safety thinking right now. And what's really cool, and we saw it today because you presented to our group today, is our folks are moving on a journey, and they're starting to view the safety and health paradigm or model differently. And so instead of just focusing on the hazard and the controls and the employee and their exposure to the hazard, they're starting to think about context. You know, the culture and the systems and the process conditions and the human factors, they really set the stage in which the hazard is confronted, and also about capacity. And that's a pretty cool thing. And the struggle isn't conceptual anymore. I think that we've read the books, and including yours, and most of our members are really starting to grasp the concepts, the challenges in the application, and figuring out how to do it, and figuring out how to get it done on the shop floor, and how to pull all of this stuff together in a way that workers can really understand it, and tackle small size sites that they would be able to do it too. And so that's what we're working on.
Yeah, and I think that the real insight that we're trying to give to people, to wake people up to, is that you have to consider, you have to look at work through the eyes of the employee and listen to what they have to say about the process, because they are the ones who understand the process better than anyone else. They are the process. They are they make it happen. And unless we start from that perspective, we can't really make progress in prevention, because we don't know what's going on, right, Todd?
Absolutely. So who are some of the people that you've brought in to talk with the groups that meet? Because you've brought in a bunch of people. And so who'd you bring in, and what did they have to say, and how did they help sort of build the consensus around this journey? That would be actually a really good question. I certainly find it interesting, and I think people would find that really interesting.
Okay, so I guess we started out with Tony Mushara. Todd was first. We had Tony Mushara come in, who focused on critical steps. We had Rob Fisher in, and who does HOP consulting. And Rob had a kind of an overall model, and he was really focused, I think, some on application. We had Chris Hart. I'm trying to, now I can't think of his name. HVACs, Scott Chappelle.
Yeah.
We had Scott Chappelle in. We started, I think one of the things that really helped me is I started out by reading Reason, which is not an easy read. If you read his book on human error, that's the one where they go, you know, I think in his introduction, he goes, well, if you're a psychologist, read the whole book, but if not, read X chapters. So I tried to read the whole book, and that was a struggle. But then I read Decker, and Decker was really helpful.
We tried to get Reason. In fact, I wrote him a letter because he couldn't find his
email. I didn't have one.
He probably didn't have one. And I tried calling him, but he wouldn't answer the phone. So I sent him a letter inviting him to come and speak to our group, right? He wrote me back and he said, you know, I'm retired and I don't fly overseas except first class. And anyway, I don't want to do it because I don't want to go anywhere. I'm retired. So that was one of our attempts to get that type of thinking before our audience. And we also had, remember way back when, before we met Todd too, there was this organization that was focused on
error prevention.
Yeah. And this guy named Kerry Johnson.
Right.
He was really into the healthcare stuff.
Oh, okay.
And also, their big thing was the Texas bonfire collapse, right?
Yeah.
So they were big into these incident analysis and how the human factors, how the error, human error had contributed to that.
Talk a little bit about your work, because you guys have really picked the ball up, I would say on a national level, around this notion of fatalities and serious injuries, more so than anybody. And to an extent, you guys are being super humble, but to an extent, I think you have a different access into government agencies. You definitely have access that other companies wouldn't have, but I think you have a moral drive. It doesn't seem like it's a financial driver. It looks like a moral driver to really tackle this notion of fatalities and serious events. And you've done a lot of work. I mean, you're in at least in the second iteration, probably the third iteration that I know of sort of pushing out some products to help people think about this problem. So talk a little bit about that history. I think people would find that really interesting.
Okay, so we started out basically, I think, trying to understand the concepts, and you really helped us with that. One of the challenges that we face, and that frankly is, as I've gotten older, more mature, is when we bring our members together, we do network meetings in addition to, you know, we provide consulting to our members over the phone and do on-site visits and that type of thing. But in our network meetings, one of the things that's easy to do is really to tee up an expert to come in and you know, spread the gospel in terms of conceptual issues. Our challenge is to help the members walk out of there with something that they can implement. And so early on, we've had a task force on fatality serious injury prevention. We've done, I think, Dee, that year we had two task forces. One was on alternative metrics, and I think we had 50 companies participating in that. And I think on our FSI prevention task force, we had about 45, something like that. We had over 40. And so the idea was, could we develop tools and approaches and do benchmarking among the member companies in terms of practical approaches for implementing some of the concepts? And we agreed at the outset as a team that whatever we built that had value, we would give away. That if there's anything we could do to help prevent fatal and serious injuries around the globe, we would do it. We did. It was kind of interesting. We started a dialogue way back when at one of our executive business issues forum meetings. And our EBIF is our highest level group. It's corporate vice presidents and directors with lead responsibility for worker health and safety. And we had a panel, and it was Dee and me and Fred Manuel and Jim Howe. Fred's an author who's written books and does a lot of writing for ASSC. I think Fred's now probably 90.
Oh, he's 90.
I think he just turned 90. So,
young.
Yeah, young man. Young man. And Jim Howe was the former deputy director for health and safety for the UAW and a really good guy. And Jim is really the one who's the lead person on the Z10 management system. And so part of our presentation at that time was pillars of the safety and health profession that could be barriers to serious injury prevention. And we were really looking at it as why, if current approaches are insufficient or seem insufficient, why and what are some of the problems? And we identified five, I think. And that was years and years ago. And those were picked up on, and I think they've remained pretty stable, you know, in terms of, I think people still believe that that's the case. And one was the Heinrich Pyramid and the belief that if you take care of the minor cases at the bottom of the pyramid, that it would also take care of the more serious cases at the top, kind of working from the bottom up. And the second was our profession's over-reliance on the OSHA data as the primary and often the sole metric to drive health and safety performance. And the third had to do with risk assessment and the idea that you look at severity of the hazard and likelihood of occurrence, and likelihood, the way we traditionally do risk assessments was based on past OSHA experience, which there have been studies that have shown that there's no relationship between OSHA rates and the likelihood of a fatality. And Dee's really the one that pushed that and pushed having a, you know, substituting the degree of control or using that to determine likelihood instead of using OSHA rates. I think the fourth one we looked at was the whole idea that the belief that people felt that higher level controls were cost prohibitive. And, you know, we had done a study for AIHA. We built a model that demonstrated the value that industrial hygiene brings to the business. And one of the things that we found is actually higher level controls bring the best economic value. And then the last one was kind of the mistaken belief that most injuries result from unsafe acts and employee mistakes. And we felt even way back then, this might have been before we met you, Todd, I think it was, that that basically that, you know, that that was based on flawed incident investigations. And so we knew that, and we called these pillars of the safety and health profession because they really were longstanding beliefs that a lot of what we do was based on. And it always amazes me because I think that we are perceived as a science-based profession, but I think a lot of what we do is based on belief and kind of lore. Yeah, lore and assumptions that really haven't been validated by the data.
And misinterpretation. The whole Heinrich thing is a misinterpretation of what he meant.
Yeah. Well, it might have been what he meant, but I think it's a misinterpretation. The Heinrich pyramid, the safety triangle, is accurate descriptively. There are more minor cases than serious, but they're not predictive. It's not predictive for fatal and serious incidents.
Right.
So we started down that journey, and then we realized there was a problem. That's when we started reaching out to experts, and you were a big one, Todd. You were great, you know, and so we used you and some of these other folks, and then we got our task force going, and we tried. We're building tools to do different steps. So we built a tool that was a different way to do a risk assessment. We built a tool that you could use to identify precursor situations to fatal and serious incidents. And where we struggled, and we're still struggling trying to figure this out, was how you integrate human and organizational issues, you know, organizational deficiencies, I call them, I guess, into your risk assessment process, because not all risk is equal. And, you know, if you just look at the hazard and the control and you don't think of the context, you don't have a real robust assessment of the risk. And so that's where we're working these days.
So let's go one other place. Thomas Kuhn, you guys know him? So Thomas Kuhn is a philosopher, researcher, physicist, and he really studied sort of the culture of science. And he talks about the invisible college. And it's the peer-related relationships that all scientists have to one another. And that advances in physics, for instance, which is what he was fixated on, are really the sum total of many individual physicists struggling to solve problems. In many ways, I see what you guys do as sort of creating this invisible college. These are organizations that, in many cases, are competitors. I mean, I certainly sat in a meeting today between Verizon and Sprint. That's all I'm going to say. I mean, I don't think we need to say more. I mean, right? You really have worked diligently for a long time to create an opportunity with the door closed for people to speak open and honestly and to really share information not only across discipline but across the industry, or maybe I mean between industries, internally to industries. That, I think, is an amazing difference that probably doesn't exist in the quality arena. It might, but I'm not aware of it. I don't know if they get together and talk about quality this way, but they talk about safety this way. That power of peer-level, pretty significant companies getting together to share openly and honestly information, I think has moved our thinking and our profession forward. That opportunity that you provide is pretty important. Talk to me about sort of how this all started. I mean, how did it begin?
ORC began in the 1920s with John D. Rockefeller.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And I don't know all of the details, but it was developed as a forum for companies to come together and talk about issues related to labor. And Rockefeller started it because his mines had some deadly conflicts with labor unions or labor. And to him, it was, you know, a wake-up call that something needed to be done to resolve these things. So ORC, it was called Industrial Resources Counselors at the time. And that, I think the year was 1922 when it started. Mm-hmm. And so the company, or the, it was a nonprofit organization in the beginning, and it kind of developed into an HR firm and through the 40s and 50s. And then in the early 70s, the Occupational Safety and Health Act was passed. And there was a need, or there was a perception that companies wanted to come together and talk about OSHA issues and how to be in compliance with this new law. And there were a lot of issues about developing regulations and all that stuff. And it kind of grew from there. And in the early years of ORC, the name changed sometime, I'm not sure when, to Organization Resources Counselors instead of Industrial Resources Counselors. In the early years, it was really focused on regulatory stuff and U.S. regulatory things. Then probably in the late 80s and middle 90s or early 90s, it started to kind of change to being more about advancing health and safety, going beyond compliance and becoming better. And so that has been the latest development, or the latest evolution of our company is, you know, companies have seen the light and seen that there's an advantage in becoming more and more proficient and more excellent at prevention and, you know, promoting health and safety. And so we'd spend less and less time on regulatory stuff in our meetings. In fact, we kind of just push that off to a newsletter now. We rarely talk about regulations or compliance issues. And we talk about how do we prevent fatalities and serious injuries? How do we get better? How do we do everything better in health and safety? So we're very proud of that.
See, that's a story I didn't know. This is pretty good to know.
It's kind of funny. So I've been with ORC about 15 years. Before that, I was on OSHA's executive staff, and I used to come to ORC meetings and threaten them, to be honest with you. But if you do health and safety, it's one of the best places in the world to work, I think. And one of the reasons is, and I was shocked. I remember my first meeting I went to, I think it was Amoco. One of the companies was presenting something that they had spent a lot of money to create, and they were sharing it with all the other companies. And I sat in the back of the room, and I asked the rep, I said, I don't get this. You guys spend a bundle of money on this. Why are you sharing? And he said, we made a decision as an organization a long time ago that we would not gain competitive advantage on worker health and safety. So that's kind of been the MO.
That was bought by BP.
I know, but that was Ed Purs. And we get to see what I call, we get to work with these companies, not only collectively in meetings, but individually. We get to know them individually, and we get to know a lot of them personally. And I get to see, and so does Dee, we get to see what I'd call pockets of brilliance. And it's that no company does everything right, but every company does something really, really well. And our job is to be out there and find that and then bring it out and get it shared. And that's kind of what we do. And the beauty of the fatality serious injury prevention work is I think for everybody, it's more than a job, it's a cause. And, you know, our guys are very, very involved in this. And when there is a serious incident in one of our companies, our guys take it personally. It's, you know, they really do. And you can feel it.
Yeah. And, you know, it was amazing yesterday. No, the day before yesterday, Yesterday when we had Tom Krause. Well, he got up in front of the room and said to the folks, you are the best health and safety professionals in the world. This group is the best health and safety professionals in the world. And he said, there's no question in my mind about it, you know, because, you know, these are the people who have have made a tremendous accomplishments, you know, in reducing injuries and illnesses in their big companies, worldwide companies. And it was just so, and he was so earnest about it. You know, it just made me feel so good that we were doing the right things.
One of the things that's pretty cool is, and I don't want to keep tooting our horn. I think that's, you know, a little tacky. But but one of the things that's really neat, too, is we've morphed from being, you know, companies kind of circling the wagons and protecting themselves from compliance to understanding compliance to exceeding compliance to sharing stuff with each other. To now, I think our guys also realize that there's an obligation to do stuff for the greater good. And that's really what we were trying to do in Santa Fe, you know, with a meeting we recently had there. And I think there's a strong sense of that now, too. So we've had David Michaels, who's the head of OSHA, reach out to us for help on fatality prevention. We are going to help him, and we maintain an ongoing dialogue with John Howard, who's the head of NIOSH, and Chris Hart, head of the NTSB. And I think this is something that as a community we need to solve. I don't think that business is going to solve it without labor. I don't think labor is going to solve it without business. And I think the government is struggling. You know, they're resource constrained and they're wedded to some of the old ways that really required rethinking. So it's a huge opportunity. If you're in this business with your heart and soul, and we are, there couldn't be a better time.
I think that's it, you guys. I don't think it gets better than that. I really don't. That's as good as it gets. Thank you. You rocked it.
Thank you, Todd.
You rocked it.
Wow, what'd you think? I told you. I think the key word for this podcast is encouraging. Sorry I keep dragging you through all these mic things, but, you know, we'll do it as best we can. I didn't want to haul a bunch of stuff to D.C., so I thought one mic, if we passed it around, would work pretty well. And, you know, I'm okay with it. I'm pretty happy. Things are getting better. Technically, we're going to get sound. What matters in this podcast, though, is what they talked about. And you heard some amazing things. You heard them talk about the fact that high-level controls probably make the most financial sense and the research behind it. A lot of talk on the Heinrich Pyramid. That's always really interesting. Lots of discussion around the fact that frequency is so seductive but so non-predictive. And those are the ideas that we struggle with. And those are important ideas for us to think about. I really found this one to be fun. This is a great podcast. And it's a great way to sort of introduce you to some leading thinkers that are often behind the scenes. And yet, in their behind-the-scenes role, I think they play a really important part of changing the world and have done so for a long time. That's the podcast. As always, subscribe, tell your friends. Let's see how many people we can get to listen to this thing. That might be fun. It's always a pleasure to spend time with you, and I can't wait for you to hear the next one. Lots of exciting things are coming down the pike. I'm really pretty pleased with how this is working out. Until then, I'm Todd Conklin. This is the Pre-Accident Podcast. Be safe.